Welcome to episode 358 of the Countdown Podcast, the true story of two middle-aged bitches who like movies so much they couldn't get any ass in high school. My name is Wayne.
That's not true. My name is Paul. No, that's not true at all. I've got very little ass. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today's topic comes from a top-level patron to the show, a new one, Nicole Presley.
Nikki P.
Welcome to the fold and thank you so much for your support of the show. As a top-level patron, every 6 months, the top-level patrons get to pick a topic for us to do, and she chose this one, the top 10 films based on a true story.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the three of you who've been with us through this whole journey, or some of the patrons who did go through the back catalogue may know that we did this episode back, I think it was episode 20 or 26, I've forgotten.
What, really?
So way back when we called it Top 10 Films Inspired by a True Story, so it was a little bit different, the brief. Tiny little bit. So I tried to keep to ones that were based on a true story rather than
much the fucking
inspired
same.
Inspired by it.
Seems, oh, okay, so you can actually reference characters, for example.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what episode we did last week, so good luck on number episode 20, motherfucker. So yeah. There you go.
So if you would like to get involved and make us pick a topic, there's only one spot left at that level because we capped it. So there's one spot left if you want to get involved. Check out the website for the show, thecountdownpodcast.com, where you can find a link to our
Patreon
page. And go there and get involved.
Hit us up. All right, we want to hear what you want.
Yeah, but today should be interesting then because my list, I went back and had a look at my list after I
did
made this
you?
One. Yeah.
Fuck, I didn't recover what we did.
Because I have Letterboxd and I keep my lists and all that kind of stuff.
I, on the other hand, yes.
Flies by the seat of his. Can you tell, ladies and gentlemen, regular listeners to the show? Yeah, very different. And I watched a lot of good films in the last 6 years since we did this topic that fit this brief. But then also I was like, yeah, that one's really more inspired by rather than based on. So move those ones out.
Okay, this should be fun.
I'm sure there'll be umbrage.
Most definitely.
Soundboarding and Wayne making outlandish choices because that is this show.
That's right.
To a T. Let's get into it then. On the other side of this segment, which kicks off every episode, it's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The recount is our recount of the week, Polly. What's up?
Well, let's get to last week's results, episode 357, where we had the awesome guests, John and Lloyd from the Pioneer Comics podcast, were on, and we did the top 10 80s comedies films.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I remember.
They put up a great fight, great list. We're on our hometown, of course. So we ended up winning 40 votes to 21, which was an excellent effort. And in fact, most of the comments were in favor of the Pioneer Comics boys. So Lee Allen Thomas, for example, wrote, "Pint gets a vote for me as Ferris Bueller is a cunt."
In the 80s, white privilege wasn't a thing that people knew about, so he could be that way.
Chris Uni, high level patrons of the show, said Vacation versus Coming to America, tough call, but Spinal Tap put it over the edge for us. Robert Fuller said, "I don't care for Spinal Tap and never watched A Fish Called Wanda." That said, Chevy Chase and John Cusack movies are a big plus in my book, so Pioneer Comics gets a vote from this countdown fan.
Boom.
John Amenta, himself from Pioneer Comics, said, "I vote for those Pint guys because I'm one of the hosts. Go Pint." And last one here, we'll go with Robert Stewart or Stu from Stu World's Order podcast, who will be a guest on this coming month on the show. Stu said, "Going with the Pint for having Naked Gun at the top where it belongs." Well, Stu, not going to be a guest anymore. We'll see him later on. Thank you so much to the guys for coming on. It was a great episode and a good fight there. All right. And then only other one bit for the recount, which is a question from Julio for the Contrarians podcast, good friend to the show. He said, and this is directed at you, Wayne, and I don't understand the reference, and I asked him, and he said, "Ask Wayne, preferably live."
Okay.
It must be asked, is Wayne the Rulatista?
Right. So the Rulatista is referenced in the show In and of Itself, the Derek Delgado one that I
believe is now on Disney Plus, according to one of our listeners.
Ah, yes, it is. All right. So I'm not sure why he thinks I'm the Rulatista, because the Rulatista is a story about a guy who played Russian roulette, and he survived the first time, and for some reason or another, came back to play it again, and survived again. So he started getting cocky, started putting 2 bullets in the gun, 3, 4.
What?
Yeah. And then one day he put 6 bullets in the gun. and said, I'm going to still beat it. Goes to put the gun to his head. There's an earthquake which knocks the gun out of his hand. And he's like, yo, you know, guns can't hurt me. And he retires from the game. Years later, someone, burglar, runs into his house, pulls a gun on him, and he's like, guns can't hurt me. Boom. Gets killed.
This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here,
okay, time. So maybe, so I'm not sure why I may be the rulerista, but maybe it's because I keep walking in here when you're playing these shitty sounds. I'm like, they can't hurt me, but they can, everyone.
Which makes it all the more worthwhile. Perhaps Julio can clarify.
Elaborate,
for us,
my man,
in that particular thread. All right, without any further ado, then let's get into Nicole's topic for today. It's the top 10 films based on a true story. Based on a true story films.
I thought I was the one with Tourette's.
If you're wondering why that came out that way, Wayne challenged me to do it in a different way last week. Different, so you always do it with the same inflection. So there we go. We've righted that particular
That'll role. Teach me.
This is the subject of this week's countdown, again from Nicole Presley. Thank you so much for your support of the show, Wayne. Pretty straightforward, based on a true story.
Mm.
Go for it, son. You're number 10.
Okay, I got to thank listener Matt Evans for this one, because I actually did check like and see what people were saying. I did a poll, everyone, before the show.
Bitch, please.
Because I was wondering for a few.
Honto?
And Matt came up with this one. I'm like, you know what? That's my perfect number 10. It's
okay.
The film Tag.
Oh, nice.
I love Tag.
Tag's
okay?
Good. Tag's good.
Everyone, Tag is a film about a bunch of buddies who've had this game of Tag, which they have, you know, continued over the years, well into their like middle age, even beyond, based on the end of the film. I think the reason I love the film is, apart from my favorite thing, is the Jeremy Renner Sherlock Holmes slow-mo taking motherfuckers out thing. That was an excellent.
Because he's the guy in the group who's never been tagged.
Never been tagged. And they're all out to get him, but he's so like basically a ninja that he can outdo any tag ever, right? That is wicked. But more than that, I think what it was that just the film itself had this perfect cocktail of funny, 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 genuinely funny, and at the end, a surprisingly heartfelt twist, which is actually sad, kind of, but somehow makes the entire rest of the movie more meaningful. It's actually probably one of my favorite films. I don't know.
Favorite
don't know.
Films?
Might be. I really, really like it. It's got Jeremy Renner, like I said, and Isla Fisher, and the dude from fucking...
Hannibal Buress,
yes. What's the new girl?
Ed Helms.
Yep. Good. See, you're good at this, man.
thank you.
And Nick from New Girl. He was Spider-Man's voice in the fucking Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, Jake Johnson.
Jake Johnson! Yeah. There you go.
All right, got there in the end.
There you are. Tag is my number 10.
Great choice by Matt, and well picked up by yourself. Yes. Yeah, it probably should have been on honorable mentions. It would have been very, very close.
Love the show.
To go from your end of the spectrum to an Academy Award winning
film based
I
knew yours
on
would
a
be
true
serious.
Story.
Yep.
Not all of them are, but this one particularly is Spotlight from 2000.
Yeah.
And was it 15? It won the Academy Award. I just remember being really... Yeah, it was. Directed by Tom McCarthy. And it just follows this...
Batman's in it, right?
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, Liev Schreiber, Stanley Tucci. And most of them are journalists who work for the Boston Globe who uncover this, basically, the Catholic Church is covering up of pedophilic priests.
Mm.
So they break the story wide open. They break the silence, as is the tagline on the particular film. And it's, I guess, speaks to me as someone who wanted to be a writer.
Mm.
So I got very close to being a journalist. If you can say studying it for 1 year is...
More than most people do.
Before realizing you're not really cut out for it.
We all do that.
Actually, okay, let's break away now.
Break away.
On that moment. Now, I've told the story to you many times, bear with me here.
Hit me.
Day one, first day of university.
Ah, yes.
Ever.
Yeah.
My first ever... lecture at university. So I'm studying journalism.
Yep.
I want to be a writer.
Totally.
So I'm doing journalism and creative writing, politics on the side. So they're the three things that I'm studying. And my first is journalism 111, as it used to be called in those particular days.
Yeah.
And get into a lecture theatre of about 400 people.
Yep.
And the lecturer gets up the front and he goes, wow, I'm always surprised by how many people turn up for day one of semester one of journalism 111.
Why? Yeah.
And he basically went on to say, because ultimately, if you're here, you're here to study towards a career in which you will be universally hated. You'll work extremely long hours to incredibly tight deadlines for relatively shit pay.
Really?
But you will meet interesting people. Next week, half the people in that lecture theatre.
They dumped after one. Yep. That was his job, to thin the herd.
I think it was.
Bloody hell.
Stunning.
That's a bit tough, isn't it? Yeah. You can come right out of high school and it's like, oh, the world sucks. You know, straight away.
Just dashed all my hopes at probably that point.
You stuck around a year, mate. At least
I did pass my units, but I didn't enjoy my time anyway. But that said, that idea of, you know, reporting the truth and writing about it in a way which people find engaging, or whatever, really speaks to me. And to see this story, which from what I understand is a pretty close approximation of what actually took place.
Mm-hmm.
It's very powerful. And because that whole small group of people or that little person against the man or the company or the power.
Or the Catholic Church.
Or the Catholic Church, which is the ultimate power in some circles at least.
Yeah, many.
What a great film and very, very powerful. So that's my number 10.
I think it's one of those movies that I have to watch again because it's like, God, I have so many movies I haven't watched yet, so it's just hard to get around to it. But yeah, I remember being very impressed at the time, but I don't remember everything I loved about it, but it definitely was good. So yes, nice work. All right.
Thank you.
My number 9 is it's a music or musician biopic, which I did not expect to like. It's Walk the Line.
Ah, I've never seen this one.
Oh, man. So this is about Johnny Cash, and it's got Joaquin Phoenix. Sorry, please, Paul.
Joaquin?
No, Joaquin was what you said.
Yeah, Joaquin.
Reese Witherspoon.
I do it now, damn it.
And it's about, you know, Johnny Cash and June Carter.
Reese with a fork.
With a fork. There you are. Without a spoon. And it's about, they're just basically, they're getting together and it was terrible. It was terrible.
I think that's spoon, but it somehow came out as fork.
It's okay. You have to try. It's not all going to be gold.
No. Right? Swing for the fences.
But what I liked about Walk the Line, and apart from the fact that River Phoenix and Reese with the spoon.
Yep.
Spoon. They all did their own singing. So that was already the shit.
That's impressive.
Right? And I didn't even know fucking Joaquin would do that shit. But that is already awesome. But for some reason, For some reason, it's Oscar winning and all that shit. But the reason it's Oscar winning, I think, is that for some reason you throw right in, because this is music not of our time and not really of my thing.
Did it win this one?
I believe Reese Witherspoon won the Oscar.
She won for
best actress or something like that. Okay. Yeah. Even the whole thing with the, you know, he did the prison concert and that's a very famous thing. And it's all this kind of shit that I never knew about because I didn't really know shit about Johnny Cash. Made me want to learn all about it. But also, it was a great ride. And
You want to read about it afterwards to enhance your knowledge, I think that's in these kind of categories, that's a good, successful film.
And it's sort of odd and interesting to me how it legitimizes, because he met June Carter while he was married. So this is a guy who, and
whoops.
You know what? Yeah, I know, whoops. And then there became this love story. Same with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. He met her and hooked up with her while he was on the movie. I can't remember what it was, whatever movie they were on together. And he was married at the time.
Tom Hanks cheated on his wife. Holy shit.
And he actually said, yes, I was married at the time, but that marriage was over for a long time. And I'm like, whoa. So I know, see? So this shit happens. You'd be surprised how many times people look past it if you're Tom Hanks. Or Johnny Cash. You can. There you are. So yes, Walk the Line, my number 9.
All right. Clearly he went over the line.
Whoa.
Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey.
He did a few lines too, I think.
Yes. I went from one Academy Award winning film to another, 12 Years a Slave.
No, I've still not seen this one because I'm not brave enough.
From 2013, directed by Steve McQueen, stars Chiwetel Ejiofor as the real life Solomon Northup, who was a free African-American man from upstate New York, who was abducted and sold into slavery. And this is a harrowing film. This is not a good time. This is not a good
film. That's why I wouldn't go see it.
Film. This is a downtrodden, I mean, arguably so spotlight, right, really? But
it's not so visceral in Spotlight. Spotlight is conceptually bad. You know the horrible thing and there's a dread. This is, I imagine, you see shit, right?
Oh, you see lots of shit.
So that's the thing.
And the thought, I know it's, this will make it okay, that in pre-Civil War US that it happened, but the thought that someone could just be taken away, plucked away from their real life on the basis of their skin color and assumed, therefore, if you got transported to another part of your country, therefore, you would be a slave. It's terrifying.
Totally, man.
And it's almost too hard to contemplate as a privileged,
absolutely,
white, middle class male.
Right? I'm brown and I can't even appreciate it.
Yeah, so phenomenal performances across the board. Michael Fassbender is chilling in this particular film, and I think he made a lot. I know he was already a big thing by 2013, but this film for me is his best performance. Chiwetel Ejiofor, of course, is great. This was my introduction to, and maybe the world's introduction to, Lupita Nyong'o as well, and who's also excellent in the film. So, yeah, there's not a bad performance here.
Do you think if you were Michael Fassbender? This is such a brave role to take, wouldn't you say? To actually allow yourself to be depicted like that in this day and age, even though it's a performance, you wouldn't be, you know, like...
What was that film? Was it called Antebellum?
Yeah.
I think that is a braver choice because it's set contemporarily.
Yes. But that's what makes it, that's its novel. You know what I mean? This here is, yeah, I know, you're playing an Olga, but like
Whereas when you're playing a period piece and you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's just, he's a really good actor. That's
okay. Yeah. That's okay because no one's going to confuse the two. Does that make sense?
I say that, man.
What's his name? Joffrey from Game of Thrones retired from acting because everyone kept thinking he was Joffrey.
You know Jeremy Piven, Ari?
Yeah.
People just hate him because he's Ari.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you, he's had a really tough time. If you look at his story.
I would love to go out with Ari for
a night. I would definitely hang with Ari, right? But he said that people just were really so willing to believe that he was a sexual predator, so willing to believe he was a cunt on a set because he played one so well. That's what he reckons.
Was he a sexual predator?
I don't know.
He was a cunt.
They would have hung some shit on him. I don't know. But he
loved his wife a lot, remember, in that show.
Yeah, but that you're right. Maybe it wasn't a sexual predator, but like people like to hang shit on a ruthless piece of shit. To say that you're ruthless, to say that you're a bad guy, all those types of things.
Yeah, we'll screw people over. Absolutely. Exactly.
So, you know, I mean, like I'm saying, but yeah, look, no doubt that Michael Fassbender, I haven't seen it. I'm too scared. I might one day, but.
Well worth your time. Obviously, next.
I don't have any problem believing film. It. Nice.
All right, back to you.
My number eight is The Aviator.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
I know. Now, I'll tell you this, right? So, Leo DiCaprio, he's playing billionaire Howard Hughes, right? From his early years as a film director and an aviation enthusiast to his downward spiral into mental illness and all that shit. I first saw this film because I'm a little wary of Scorsese. I mean, it's...
Really?
Yeah, that last... The Netflix one? Yes. No, not for me.
Oh, fuck. We're not going to get back into that.
I know we're not on my list,
so you're fine. Continue.
Here's my problem. He makes 18-hour movies, okay? I know you're good, Martin. I know your stuff is good, but you got to stop at some stage. And so this was also another very long film. However, a little bit like he's becoming my fucking Coen brothers a bit, because I go back and see his movies, and then I go, oh, I see. That's why it was brilliant. Now, this one here, Howard Hughes is in sort of insane kind of weird phobia
gets
guy.
Gets there in the end, right? Doesn't he?
Yeah, but he's real quirky all the way through the film. Like, he can't talk if there's a bit of dust on someone's suit. Sort of
15 or 16 years ago.
Yeah. Well, what was exciting about it is that, okay, so he's a film director, but then he's also this aviation enthusiast who always does the test pilot thing himself. And there's a bit where he lands at a fucking field, almost crashes, and he just buys company, and he loses money over and over and over again. But it's such an actually thrilling ride. And even at the end, when you think he's a shut-in and you don't know what's going on and he's always just going to go nuts because he's got to go to court and face the fucking government, he goes into court and actually represents himself and makes this fucking outstanding case where you're like, holy shit, right? And you can tell that he hasn't got it anymore. So he's still got it. He might be insane, but he's not crazy, but he's not stupid. You know what I mean? Mm. And it was that kind of shit. So I like The Aviator. Yeah, big fan.
Surprised. Did not think this...
Again, only upon my second and third viewing.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Watched this film three times.
I know, I liked it.
And yet you haven't watched 12 Years a Slave.
I know.
And a multitude of other films I've recommended
to you
over the years. Well, speaking of scary, I've got three Academy Award winners in a row. This is pretty stunning. My number eight is what many consider to be Steven Spielberg's finest film. I don't.
Mm.
I think it's a very, very good film, and it's a very powerful film. It's Schindler's List.
Yeah. Huh. Look, you can't really say a damn thing about this film, but I remember when I watched it, you know the bit at the end where they had the real life thing and the actual Jew? I thought that was a bit on the nose. For some reason, I thought this is an odd moment to put in the film after it was all historical and now real footage, and then it's like, well, what's this?
But how many different based on true story films end with... The photos actual people, or the actual people, if they're alive, might be being interviewed before the credits or through the credits. Or
I think it's the first time I'd come up against it. I'd not seen that before.
We were pretty young.
We were young. And I was sitting like, oh, but amazingly, like, I think more the fact, forget that, that was what my one misgiving. But this black and white film, mostly except for the red coat girl.
A couple of little moments.
And a couple of moments. I don't think I had the capacity to appreciate the art of it at the time. And I think I'd seen it or scenes of it since and gone, yeah, this is amazing. So no doubt.
Everybody's excellent in this film. Liam Neeson, Ben Kingsley, Ralph Fiennes.
We won't even make a dick joke this time because it's such a good film.
Yeah. It's somewhat disrespectful. It's very hard to be funny. Not that we're trying to be every film. And this is not a topic that lends itself to be overly funny, let's be honest.
Yeah, but we're trying.
Wayne's trying.
I always try.
I'm trying to present to you what I feel are the best ever films based on.
Not me. I'm trying to entertain you.
I hope you'll be entertained by watching the films I recommend.
Still, too far away.
And right there, we may have summarized the entire podcast in a nutshell.
I want you laughing now in front of me, whereas Paul's happy for your which general happiness.
Ironically, is not in front of you because Wayne can't hear when you laugh at his shit.
Spiritually in front of me. So, yeah. No, look, no one's going to have a problem with your Schindler's List, man.
No. I don't think anyone could say this is a bad film. You may not have enjoyed it. It might have been too harrowing for you. It may have really hurt you in terms of, like, it was painful to watch and see how man's or humans inhumanity to humans can be depicted. It's an incredibly tough watch, but an important one. Schindler's List is my number 8.
Nice. My number 7 is also a movie that kind of broke my heart, unfortunately. It's The Imitation Game.
Oh, I've never seen this one either.
Well, Benadryl Cumslut is the Benedict Cumberbatch in some circles.
people that use his name.
Yes. Well, it's about Alan Turing, the computer scientist, and he tries to crack this Enigma code during the war that the Nazis used to provide security for their radio messages. He was a genius, apparently very difficult to work with, as depicted by this film.
I know how that feels.
Good one. But because he's a real, like, he considers everyone inferior to him. However, he did have to overcome the mathematical and social difficulties. And of course, because he was gay back then,
yeah, completely not allowed.
Not allowed, and literally by the end of the film, even after he cracks the code and saves countless millions probably by being able to stop them, whatever, he has to be, by law, chemically castrated. So he has to keep taking these drugs or go to jail. That's how they treat
him. Because he's insane?
Because he's gay!
You're joking.
That's what the fucking movie is about, man. That's a part of the movie. That's what happened to him in real life.
Holy shit.
I know, and I'm like, what the fuck? Because they wouldn't accept that he was gay and a hero. So
I'm horrified by your shit description of it, let alone by the actual film.
It's literally because they think he's gay.
I can't believe that. In the 1940s?
1940s, you had to cure yourself of being gay. So you have to be chemically castrated or go to jail.
Oh, my God.
Either way. I know, man. And so it's like, fucking hell, I can't believe it did actually break my heart. So it's just like, this is ridiculous now. Shit, it should have been ridiculous back then.
Should have been, yeah.
And that's literally how he went down. So
wow. Okay, yeah. That has stunned me. Well played, sir.
Locked up.
Clearly a good film. Oh, maybe I need to watch this one.
Probably.
All right. Well,
now I'm sad I called him Cumslut. But there you are. Oh, shit.
I'm trifle sad that you drew attention to that. Oh, shit. All right. My number 7 is a film which we reviewed in the life of the podcast and wasn't on my list of that one 330 episodes or so ago. It's Hacksaw Ridge, directed by...
You know, I almost put in there this in here just to fuck. It's an honorable mention for mine, but I knew it would be on your list.
Yeah,
Hacksaw Ridge.
This film blew me away. I was not ready for it. I know it's directed by Mel Gibson. I know he's sort of pseudo canceled and whatever.
Hey, fuck everyone. Mel Gibson is a great actor and a great director.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'm sorry. All right.
He is. His performances, his professionalism is.
I would turn your attention towards Joss Whedon. Just forget about fucking Mel Gibson. All right, just forget about him.
As far as people go. I think clearly Joss Whedon's a bigger prick than...
Yes! Oh, look, you...
Anyway,
let's not get there.
They're both fruit. Let's not compare apples and oranges.
Okay, well done.
But in terms of this film, for a budget which was minuscule, like we're talking $60 million from vague memory.
Yeah. I remember you surprising me with that upon our review.
So you do remember shit from years ago?
Yeah, some. Snippets, Paul. It's all a blur, really.
Next thing, Wayne's going to say, what's your name again?
Exactly.
But this story about Desmond T. Doss, as played by Andrew Garfield, a pacifist who gets into the army.
Go on.
He said, I'm only going to be in the health corps and whatever else, and has to fight his way into the army because they try him and bar him from it.
He doesn't want to pick up a gun.
Yeah, because he's never going to fire a gun. He makes that very clear. And then when he gets to the Battle of Okinawa, was it?
One of those ones?
Yes, it was Battle of Okinawa. Yes. And he saves countless lives during that. And the way that's depicted, the first half of the film is fine. It's a little slow. The second half of the film, it takes off in a way that I was not prepared for. It's visceral. It's heartrending. Built up all these sort of side characters, including Vince Vaughn as the drill sergeant. What's his name from Luke? Is it Luke Brady? Bracey. Luke Bracey, an Australian guy who was his antagonist in the film. And
that's right.
How they all sort of come together when it really matters.
Yes. That was the best thing about it. Yeah. And also, like, the final half of the film, it was like it's very a two halves kind of film. The first thing is a drama, but it's a good drama. Like, the shit in there, it teaches you what you need to know about him so you can understand him later. So it's a good
And this is a film that ends with an interview of him as well.
Good point. Yes, nice work. So yes, all right. Yeah, good call.
So it can happen, and it can be okay. And I, as I said, I think it's a feature of these kind of films. But all right, nevertheless, that's my number seven, Hacksaw Ridge.
Wicked.
I should mention, very quickly, brutal as hell.
Graphic, oh, no. That's Mel Gibson's shit is all like that. Yeah. So, all right. My number six is surprising to me when I thought where this fell on the list, but then I'm like, yeah, this is how much I like it. American Sniper.
Really?
Yeah. So the thing
where's
that...
Where's my hot damn message?
Well, my...
damn it.
The thing that surprised me about maybe myself...
What have I done to deserve this bullshit?
Do you not like this movie?
I just think it's fine.
Okay. So why I think this stuck out in my head is that... by the way, everyone, it's got Bradley Cooper in it, and it's about the real-life Navy SEAL Chris Kyle. He's like the deadliest sniper in the U.S. military history with like 255 kills. He did four tours in the Iraq War, took a very heavy toll on his personal and family life, and eventually it led to him being killed. But
well, did it lead to being killed? Well, wasn't he just shot in a car park or some shit?
He went to a shooting range with someone who was a fan of his.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that guy shot him in the range. Right. So I don't know. And they don't actually cover that scene. They just see him leaving with the guy. But what I think it did for me, I guess, is I commonly wonder about how I would do as a soldier. And the answer in my head is not well.
Nor me.
Not well. All right. So I think to myself about my dad was a soldier. He was in the army. Right. So under a live fire situation, I always wonder what kind of man I really would be. And in this film, you see what ostensibly is like a sort of a redneck kind of culture, right?
Yeah.
And to see what motivates him and the fact that he sits there and like snipes for like, you know, 20 hours. And when he leaves, there's piss all over the floor because he just doesn't go to the bathroom and shit like that. He's happy to sit there just to, you know, that kind of drive. It kind of made me understand that better, the whole American, like, just the experience of the way you see it through his eyes. He says he'll go on four tours because that way he can save more of his own soldiers.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's
driven
like,
in that way.
Yeah, and I can't really identify with it, but the way the movie did it for me, I actually kind of really like, I don't know, it changed me a bit.
Okay.
So that's why. American Sniper.
Fair enough. I know, right? You might be surprised by my number six, which I was surprised by, if I'm really honest.
All right.
From 2017, it's I, Tonya.
Oh, that's a good call.
From director Craig Gillespie.
That's a really good call.
Starring Margot Robbie, who one of the obviously most attractive women of all time.
Big fan, Paul, is.
I am. But more importantly, she is perfect as Tonya Harding in this film. Like,
absolutely.
Who didn't hear about this whole Tonya Harding? What was
the young kids may not have, but when Nancy Harrigan and Tonya Harding had their thing.
Thank you. I was scrambling. What's the name again?
No, it's because Nancy. Here's the thing, right? I didn't realize this
Nancy
at the time.
Kerrigan.
Yeah, Nancy Kerrigan, right? Now, if you look at Nancy Kerrigan, the real person, and Tonya Harding, right? Nancy Kerrigan is this fucking beautiful girl. She's got this perfect face. And Tonya looks a bit ragged, mate. Right? She looks, you can tell she's a bit
trailer park.
Yeah, a bit trailer park. Nothing at all like Margot Robbie.
Exactly. So right. They managed to make her personify. Well, she managed to make herself personify this.
Well, that was the good thing about this film. Yeah. I saw that whole thing and I was like, ugh, I didn't like Tonya Harding. And then the news came out that Tonya Harding had someone smack Nancy Kerrigan's leg with an iron bar and fuck up her knee and shit. And everyone was like, oh my God, we all hate Tonya Harding, right? Mm-hmm. So I believed from the media that I was like, that wench, I can't believe she did that. I can't, blah, 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 blah. And then Nancy Kerrigan came back after that and everyone celebrated her literally on a parade. When her knee works again. It's great. We love her. This movie shows you what happened from Tonya Harding's point of view.
Yep.
And she had fuck all to do with it. It was amazing.
Yep. If you believe the film, of course. But look, anyway.
But that's how it would go. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
What I really like about the film is how well it's directed and how good Margot Robbie is in this particular. And Alison Janney as her mum.
Dude, the relationship between her and her mum and the thing that happens when she tries to record her. Damn, it's just like
so you get a perspective on things. Like she's not a terrible person. She's got problems. She's got issues. She's jealous. Yes, she is, but she did not intend, at least according to the film, intend for something like that to take place. It was her fuckwit boyfriend and the guy that
that's right. He hired. But what was interesting to me is that the whole ice skating federation or Olympic or whoever the governing body is, they hated her as a spokeswoman too because they thought she was bringing the sport into disrepute by being a redneck. So yeah, there you go. Interesting. Really good call.
Really well directed.
I really like that film, so I should have had that on mine.
Ah, all right.
Well
done,
old man.
Thank you. All right, over to you. Top halves of the list.
Top half, number five. I was once derided for not liking this film and then I watched it again and then I watched it a third time and I actually think it's awesome now. It's The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, yeah. Scorsese, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So me, again.
Sure. There's one more Scorsese film on your list.
I'm afraid there isn't, Paul. We can talk about it when it doesn't happen.
Oh!
because I don't. We'll talk. All right.
Fuck.
Oh, don't worry about it, man. I've got a case. So, all right. Wolf of Wall Street for what it's worth.
Shit case is falling to pieces. The handles great, come off it.
Who farted? All right. So. Everyone, this is based on the memoir of fraudulent stockbroker Jordan Belfort, The Wolf of Wall Street. Now, my issue with it initially was that it was 45 minutes too long. Again,
it's a long film.
Marty doing this. And that, all of the goodwill the movie built up to that point until I get tired of it, pissed away by the end of the movie because I was like, just end already, okay? I was initially very harsh on it. I came back to it and then I realized the masterpiece it was. After the second viewing at that 45 minutes towards the end thing, I was still invested and I stayed invested towards the end. Made me watch it again a couple years later. You look, I used to love this whole American Psycho thing and the idea of the yuppie 80s and, you know, celebrate that. But this is more than that. This showing him the wife and the, you know, the cars and all the shit that he does.
Margot Robbie again.
Margot Robbie again. There you go. Like, I don't know. For some reason, I found it endlessly engaging the second and third time. So I actually like this film now. And I think Leo is the shit. Mm-hmm. That shit? I mean, that's pure performance art.
I'm shocked you didn't like this the first time you watched it.
Again.
Other than its length.
I loved it and then the length fucked with me and I didn't let it do it the second time. I still think you should have made it shorter, which, Marty.
If you think about it, is a comment that Wayne's heard
many
times.
There you go. I guess I should have seen it coming, but I didn't. Wolf of Wall Street, my number five.
Okay, my number five is one of my favorite films that I've seen in the life of the podcast, which is outside my normal wheelhouse, if I can call it that. It's Martin McDonagh's Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which I found out through research for this.
I didn't think it was a real story.
I did not either. So here's the story and here's how it works. It was inspired by, by the unsolved 1991 murder of 34-year-old Kathy Page in Vidor, Texas. After no progress was made on catching a killer, Page's father started putting up billboards along I-10 in the Vidor area calling out the police. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Martin McDonagh lived in that area of the world at that point in time.
Really?
And drove along seeing these billboards and the idea for the film started there.
Nice. Exciting.
So, yeah, okay. So it's not the same murder. It's not Frances McDormand's character in it, but I thought that was similar enough and it was on all the lists online. For me.
Okay. Only the listeners can judge whether that's inspired by or based on. It sounds a little inspired by me, but okay. That's fine. These things are movies. You play jazz with art. It's fine with
me. I like the way that Wayne, first of all, puts the idea in and then goes, hang on, I'm not that guy. So don't judge me for it.
I'm learning from one Paul Brazula, everyone.
No, I would just be all in on like questioning. You're like, yeah, you can question Paul. But you don't have to because it's jazz.
I'm more of a subtle man, man. What can I say?
Don't fall for his shtick, ladies and gentlemen. He's calling me out on that particular one.
Fair enough. No, but like, well, it's a surprising and perhaps entertaining choice. So let's keep it. Let's go to the Cooper. All right?
Okay. We'll roll with that. That's. I think if you've seen the film, you know what it's about. And if you don't, it's exactly that story, except with a mother instead of a father.
Fantastic. Woody Harrelson shit was going on, man.
Woody Harrelson was good. Everyone's good in this movie. Yeah. Everybody. There's not a bad... And I think Frances McDormand won the Academy Award for this one too. So,
see, yeah. He'll do that, then he'll do fucking Now You See Me. So everyone has to pay the bills, people.
Or fucking Venom, let there be,
oh, shit,
let
oh,
there
shit.
Be carnage.
There was a shit ass in that movie. Hoi. So yes, exactly.
All right. Your number four.
My number four. Again, one of my favorite films, Molly's Game, everyone. Molly's Game.
Yeah, it's on my honorable mentions.
Is it? Yeah. So Jessica Chastain, who I like, and Paul is less a fan of because of his redhead unfixation.
Have you watched the 355 yet?
I haven't. Have you?
I started it. Turn it off.
Oh, no. Because I was getting this.
I'll go back to it.
Apparently, that 355 is considered the first real bomb of 2022.
It won't be the last.
Moonfall! Go check out our review of that when it comes out. All right. So, Molly Bloom, she wrote a memoir, and it's about where she created a legal/illegal gambling casino-like action.
You have to say /legal.
Well,
it's not legal.
It was legal for a while, and then she started taking a rip of the pot, which you're not allowed to do. Yes. And then, you know, she had to do that. But she was a Olympic skier. Some shit fucked up. It fucked her whole back up. They had to reconstruct her back. And she came back. She became this person. There was gangsters and shit and fucking... Kevin Costner was a dad. That was a great scene. There's like... Remember Paul said... Paul the Shrink actually said to me, this is a good scene. But Kevin Costner sits down with her and says, okay, I'm going to do like whatever, 3 months of psychoanalysis in the next 3 minutes. And he asked the right questions, apparently, according to Paul.
Yeah.
Which actually was good. So this is worth watching for that scene alone. But the whole movie is fantastic. And yes, big fan. I've actually recommended this film to like 4 or 5 women who all came back and said, this is the shit.
Yeah.
So there you are.
Totally. Great film. Aaron Sorkin.
As a Sorker, he's the shit.
First entry, he's got a couple of honorable mentions on mine. Oh, well, this game being one.
Mm-hmm.
My number four, now we're getting old school here, and it's funny that all my favorite based on true story films aren't in the life of the podcast. They're going all the way back to sort of when I became a film lover in the sort of late 80s, early 90s, and yeah, this is the first of those. Surprises me
very little, of course.
From 1989, this is Edward Zwick's Glory.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and this one is literally based on Robert Gouldshaw's diaries. So this
okay,
is,
no, it's definitely him.
Yeah, and he did die in the particular, whatever particular battle it was. And it basically follows the US Civil War's first all-African-American volunteer company, fighting prejudices, but obviously within their own army, as well as the Confederates. So this has got Denzel Washington won his first Academy Award for this film in a supporting role. Matthew Broderick is Robert Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Cary Elwes, Morgan Freeman, Andre Brower. It's a who's who of
totally
around that particular time. Such a powerful film. James Horner's score haunts me to this day.
Usual scores, particular. But yes. You know, I remember two things about this film that really hit me. One was when, after a battle, one of the African-American soldiers was wounded, and he was wounded bad enough that he could go home, right? And then Matthew Broderick comes up and says, well, I do envy you, whatever your name is. You know, you'll be home and, you know, you can mm-hmm. be with your loved ones, this and that. And then the dude goes, don't send me home. Because his life back there was so bad as an African-American in that time that being sitting here fighting for your life is preferable.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. And that hit me in the face. And of course, at the end, when they're putting the bodies into the fucking, you know, the pole, and then Matthew Broderick turns up and, oh my God, yeah, you didn't know that stage. When
I'm pretty sure you see him killed in that final battle.
You see
battle.
The gun, the cannon thing go off when they turn up.
Yeah.
But it was, I don't know, I guess you could assume that he was dead.
I mean, for a spoiler, for a film that's 33 years old, everyone dies. Everyone of consequence dies in this film.
Hence
so.
Paul loves it. Yep.
Sure, Cary Elwes' character as well, he dies. So the two white officers both die as well, which I think is really important. To
absolutely.
Story. And again, he did die in battle. I don't know whether he died like this, but it's all based on his diaries and whatever else and a novel that was written off the same. So,
dude, if you got that material, you're writing a good ending no matter what.
Yeah.
So,
great film, Glory. Number four.
Nice one. My number three is a film that I did not expect to like, but I actually liked a whole lot, and I knew so little about it, I didn't know who was in it. It turns out the people in it were Jessica Chastain again.
Here we go.
And everyone's favorite, Chris Pratt.
you mean Super Mario?
Super Mario, it's a me. All right, Zero Dark Thirty, everyone. Zero Dark Thirty is the film.
Oh, yeah, I know you love this one.
Cat Bigelow. Now, I was expecting a very... or as I know her.
Nickname basis, KB, Wayne KB. And she.
I was expecting a very eat your veggies, they're good for you kind of film. Because I remember that... Yeah, because I hate that, right? So, like, when... And I remember this was being made when Osama bin Laden was, in fact, killed. So they had to change the movie. So then I was like, ooh, how are they going to handle the kill shot? And the way they did handle it in this film, apart from it being basically a thriller, this is an amazing like action film, pretty much. It was just the Minerva SEALs were in his house and it was dark, and then you just see this silhouette walk into the frame of the door and boom, he's done. That was it. It wasn't any dramatic shit, it was just done. And you didn't even linger on his body. None of that shit. And the whole thing became amazing for it. So I think it was definitely a factor of me not expecting much, but then getting everything. But also the fact that this is tastefully handled how you would do that shot. So yeah, Zero Dark Thirty, y'all, up in there.
I'm shocked. I'm always shocked you love this film so much. It's fine. It's a fine film.
Yeah, I guess
it, for me, it does fall into that eat your veggies kind of film. You should see this
but
movie.
It's so cool.
It's worth watching. It's a 3-star film for me. And
really?
No,
I loved it. I loved it.
Just for me. All right, my number four is one of the greatest, if not the greatest Western, I think, ever put to film.
If you say fucking The Magnificent Seven by fucking, what's his name?
Antoine Fuqua.
You can kiss my ass.
No. Well, technically, we need to give credit to George P. Cosmatos, but actually, apparently, it was Kurt Russell who directed this film. 1993's Tombstone.
Tombstone, okay.
The story of Wyatt Earp and the battle at the OK Corral. Look, I don't know if there's ever been a finer cast of character actors I love assembled for a film. Let's just list them off here.
Bring it.
And mainly leading men and ladies as well. Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, Charlton Heston, Jason Priestley.
Hey, leave fucking Brandon alone.
Stephen Lang, Thomas Hayden Church, Dana Delaney. Like, what a fucking cast.
Huge. Huge.
Michael Rooker's even in this film too, which I barely even remember.
Yeah, I remember. I just remember what a cunt Powers Booth was.
Yes.
I was like, you bastard. You go to a wedding and kill everyone and then eat their food. What the fuck?
Michael Biehn as well, pretty good as the other bad guy in the film. But the standout here is clearly Val Kilmer.
Oh, yes. Doc Holliday was never this cool or never like... I never wanted to adopt a southern drawl so much
your
in my life.
Daisy, you do.
I'm your Shuckleberry.
Shuckleberry. Yeah, I messed it up. But yes, no, he did it more better than me. That was wicked and good call. And I understand why you're putting tunes on here. I'll be honest with you. I know it's definitely fits the bill, but it doesn't seem like an actual real...
Because it's too cool.
Yeah, it's way too cool. Did you know Wyatt Earp has never been grazed by a bullet? Everyone around him died, but this motherfucker is like...
By the way, you frame that in the present tense. He's never going to be grazed by a bullet either way.
I do believe he's... Yeah, you're right. He's never... But that's a motherfucker with a charmed life. Not only are you busting caps with like other motherfuckers in a gunfight. Who's been in a gunfight, like a showdown before? He didn't die that long ago either.
Yes, he did.
No, he did. Where was he?
It was a long time ago. Yes, I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head, but he wasn't alive.
Oh, yeah, it was the 1800s. Tombstone. You're right. It was quite a long time ago, everyone. I'm thinking of something else. But he did never get grazed by a bullet and never will.
Thank you.
So, yeah, right. No. Good show.
You're number two.
Number two is Steve Spielberg's Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, of course it is.
Of course it is, bro. Everyone, Frank Abagnale is a real dude and played by Leo DiCaprio and FBI agent fucking, can't remember his name. Played by Tom Hanks.
T. Hanks
is also real. And these people, after, you know, everything, everyone knows this movie. It's about this confidence trickster. He's a young kid. He's amazing. He can do all sorts of shit. He ducks and waves the cops and ends up in French jail and American jail. And then the guy who's chasing him down actually in real life has now become his friend. And now he advises for banks. There's a Google Talks thing with Frank Abagnale talking, which you should definitely look up. He's fucking really cool. And you can sort of, I don't know. The whole deal is about this film is that he's so charming that it literally overtakes every other obstacle that he has. He fakes being a pilot through charm. He fakes being a doctor through charm. And it's like, he's just lucky that he was never called upon to actually fly a plane or solve, you know, shit like that. But it's a charmed life again. This guy really shouldn't be anything but purely skating by on being a charming guy.
But there he is.
There he is. Amazing. Yeah. And it happened. So I've always loved that movie. Plus, it's always really, really well
made. I knew it was a big fan of yours. So.
Yeah.
Understand why it's on your list. My number two is a film which you might be shocked by, Wayne, but I did my research. It's based on a book of the same name written in 1957. It's 1987's Brian De Palma, before he De Palma'd The Untouchables.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You should have been on your list, shouldn't you, Wayne?
This is really much better than Wayne. Everyone vote for Paul. It's fine.
Clever play. People will just be like, no, Wayne. Telling me what to do?
You can.
Look, so I did my research, and obviously, I don't know whether...
Okay, no one really knows, but it's good enough.
Apparently, they did a lot of research about whether the book itself was based on fact or not, and the end result, based on a Vanity Fair article from writer Matthew Pearl, citing up-to-date, untouchable scholarship, observed that Ness and Fraley, who co-wrote the book with Elliot Ness, so he's basically his autobiographer, by and large, appear to have been telling the truth, which they went after Capone for tax evasion. That was the only way they could actually get him,
despite
all the shit that he actually did.
I think that's well known.
And they knew that he did. So yeah.
I read an autobiography by a historian who actually was very close to it, and he said, Elliot Ness, a quote from Elliot Ness is, I got nothing against a good mug of beer, and the people don't like this law because it's a stupid law.
Yeah, well, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Prohibition. Ridiculous.
You can't drink, Paul. I think not. I'm going to make a still.
Take a drink of my beer in protest.
Exactly. You would try your own still. I mean, much like the people who couldn't smoke marijuana did. So
create their own stills. Right, yeah, yes.
Stills of sorts.
You're absolutely right, though, that the need to be able to change your level of consciousness is inbuilt in us. We're not meant to operate at the same level at all times.
Exactly.
And so to alter our perspective or perception of the world, most people really enjoy that experience. Not to the extent where you blow your mind, but for a short period of time where you're hopefully within control of your faculties, normal and natural, and that's all right, to basically rule it out, of course people are going to find alternatives.
Exactly. And it became a whole subculture.
Yep. And made it worse. It's like, you know, let's get rid of smoking. You're allowed to smoke legally. Well, people will find fucking ways to smoke.
A smoking speakeasy is going to turn up. Who knows?
Exactly.
But yeah, no, that's great. No, The Untouchables was this shit, and I think that... I mean, I think from, was it 1987?
Yep.
So I'm in year 7, 13 years old. And
12 years old.
12 years old? 12, yep. Well, I turned in January. So, oh, no, you're right. It is 12. Yeah. Anyway, that slow-mo scene, for it to go so long and for it to be so brutal.
One of the greatest scenes ever.
All the innocent people died. The sailors all got shot before everyone else did, right? And he's saving I'm like,
one of the most stylistically well-filmed sequences ever. What about the fact that when we lose Malone?
Malone, yeah.
Sean Connery's character's death.
You prepared to go.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Just like a, excuse the racial slur, I'm not going to even say it, Italian racial slur. Brings a knife to a gunfight.
I thought you could make white people racist jokes. Anyway. I know the net's getting tighter and tighter, everyone.
And safer to be safe. Let's put it that way. And even the way that we lose the accountant dude amongst them all, you know, bam, touchable.
Dude.
This whole film, written by David Mamet as well, this movie.
Was it? Is that why it's so fucking
good? This is back
good.
when David Mamet, I think, was at the height. This is before Glengarry Glen Ross, when he was really honing his prowess. And to combine him with a director who still was producing brilliant films.
At the time, this guy was on top.
Kevin Costner is perfect as the fresh-faced Elliot Ness, I think, as well. I'm not a huge Costner fan.
Well, no one had heard of him before this film.
Here, he's brilliant. And Andy Garcia, and just the cast is spot on.
Malone your favorite character? I mean, not Malone. Who's
Stone.
Andy? Stone, that's right.
Andy Garcia.
Because everyone loves that motherfucker, right?
Oh, and look, Robert De Niro, who portlied up and became Al Capone.
Al Capone, yes.
Is also brilliant, so yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. That's where I think that might be the first time I saw Robert De Niro. An innocent man. He's doing that thing with his voice. You know, like, oh, this guy. So, yeah, definitely. Good call.
Thank you. All right. Well, I'll give us your 10 through 2, Wayne, and then reveal your number 1.
Word. My number 10 was Tag. 9, Walk the Line. 8, The Aviator. 7, The Imitation Game. 6, American Sniper. 5, The Wolf of Wall Street. 4, Molly's Game. 3, Zero Dark 30. 2, Catch Me If You Can. And my number 1, much to a few people, but certainly Paul's chagrin, is The Social Network.
Yeah, look, you know what? Full credit here to Nick Haskins, ex-epic film guy, now Nikolai's Kitchen
podcaster, yes.
He maybe watched this back in the day when he was still doing a film podcast, and I have come to see its...
Oh, really?
Brilliance is too strong a word, but it's really well-madeness. Yeah. It's still not a film I love because the subject matter isn't what I will really get into, but I have upped my grade to 3.5 stars. It's on my honorable mentions.
I'll take it.
So I see where you're coming from, but please, what is it about this film that speaks to you so much?
Okay, so everyone knows this is the Facebook movie without it being the Facebook movie. It is about, of course, Mark Zuck and his rise, whatever. Jesse Eisenberg doing great, Andrew Garfield again doing great, and J to the T, Justin Timberlake. Frankly, I liked his role here. And, you know, actually,
Napster found it, right?
Sean Parker. So what it was like, as you said, Paul, it is not the type of subject matter you'd think would be particularly compelling. However, for a purely dialogue-driven show, which is long, it's a long movie, I wasn't bored even once. And Jesse Eisenberg is doing that perfectly.
He's really great. He's really great.
Yeah. I'm sure Army Hammer eats people, but he's also...
Can you imagine what 2 Army Hammers would do?
Army Hammers would fucking clean house, man.
Wouldn't be a fucking shred of meat left for anyone.
Jesus, it's so bad.
It's so dark,
I wonder if he'll ever come back. I really do.
He's in Death on the Nile out next week, but they really took him out of all the advertisers. You barely see him.
Shit, you can't even act. It's like you can't even joke about cannibal. Or not joke. Yeah, I don't know. This poor guy. Well.
No, not if he's really into it. That's not a poor guy.
I don't think he is. He's just fucking talking shit to women. It happens. Anyway.
Okay, let's clarify. Let's go down this road.
Fuck it. All right.
Wait, when talking shit, you say to women, have you said, I'd like to eat you?
No. I've never been the guy who says shit like that.
Not in a eat you out kind of way.
No, and I haven't even done that. It's said that. Thank you. But there's lots of in-joke. You know, there's these two comedians, Tom Segura, they do this, like, the Your Mom's House podcast. She said that when he met her, they were in love, and he said, man, I love you so much, I want to kill you and eat your bones. And he's making jokes about it because they're comedians, right? That happened. He didn't get nailed. So I'm not sure Army Hammer's doing the exact same thing with whoever he was Tinder dating with. It is a very odd thing to say, and I think but you can't pick your kink, right, Paul? And I'm sure he doesn't really eat people. I mean... Look at that body, all right? I'm sure he's on a very high-protein diet, but not human flesh.
What's more protein? No, all right, enough of this.
Keep going. Okay, so yeah, sorry. I mean, look, I don't think I'm going to say too much more about this. The Social Network is a shit. And if you're listening to this podcast, you've definitely seen it, right? You've definitely seen it. If you haven't, you should. Clear the time aside and do it. I'm saying.
All right.
All right. One guy talking.
My 10 through 2 then, beginning with Spotlight at number 10, 9, 12 Years a Slave, 8, Schindler's List, 7, Hacksaw Ridge, 6, I, Tonya, 5, Three Billboards, Outside Ebbing, Missouri, 4, Glory, 3, Tombstone, 2, The Untouchables, and my number 1, the best Martin Scorsese film.
Well, now, Paul,
without question.
Okay.
One.
Sorry.
Wayne literally dropped his shit. One that... is celebrated in all quarters as the greatest crime gangster film ever made. I'm talking Goodfellas. from 1990, based on Henry Hill, an absolute autobiography that he wrote.
Absolutely.
Where is this in your list, Wayne?
I've got a cold take for you.
Oh, fuck's sake.
All right, so here's the thing.
No. Before you speak, I need to tee up some shit.
Oh, fuck off.
Go on.
Okay, so here it is. The first half to first two-thirds of Goodfellas is outstanding, fantastic, never seen anything like it before, pure, pure awesomeness. Half.
You're talking about the last 20 minutes.
The last 20 minutes where he's old and the helicopters and shit like that.
He's not even old, he's just...
Middle-aged or whatever.
Early 80s.
Like, everything's falling apart. I don't enjoy that part of the film and I stop watching at that end because that's all set 80s or 70s.
Why?
Because... It's no long. The whole point of Goodfellas is the celebration of that gangster shit.
The rise and fall.
Yeah, I don't like the fall. All right, it's not fun to watch. I don't want to watch it. Okay. And there's an odd thing here because Henry Hill, the character, and the way Ray Liotta plays him reminds me heaps of my dad.
Oh well, right? Okay, well, I can't.
No. But I'm not saying it doesn't make it like it doesn't mean.
Well, I was going to use this.
Suck my dick.
Well, I can't now.
Suck my dick. So it's like no, but and that's it. So it's a personal thing. But also, I also maintain that part of the movie isn't as fun to watch. I don't know why. I don't have a good time with it.
You're not meant to have a good time with the fall.
You are. If
otherwise,
it's like,
we're celebrating crime and you should all get into crime. You should all do crime. Crime, crime, crime.
Like the end of Swordfish? I don't know. You can do it. You can do it.
Hang on.
I'm not comparing the two, though I do like Swordfish.
It sounded like you said you did.
I do like Swordfish. It's only in George Travolta gets away with it. So it's like, oh, well, okay. So anyway.
Thanks for listening to a podcast. I understand. Swordfish is considered by one of the co-hosts to be a better film than Goodfellas. It was lovely
I
having you
here. I
didn't
say that, so if you could please eat my asshole. All right. But yes, yeah, so I know. I understand you and everyone having this on their list. Guys, vote for Paul. I've got a weird list and yes, I'm a weird man. Paul. Okay, just go ahead. Go ahead. It's fine. Goodfellas, solid choice. Here's the reason I didn't have it on there. That's okay. All.
Right, well, on that fucking bombshell one, what honorable mentions do you have?
Oh, good. Honorable mentions, plenty. Midnight Express.
Okay. Never seen that one.
Zodiac.
All the President's Mel.
All the President's Mel. They all had a Mel. I was going to put Hustlers in here for fun.
Oh, I thought. I was
thinking about it. And it is on an honorable mention because I think it's a fantastic movie. Hacksaw Ridge, Argo, Rush.
Okay. I've got The Pianist, The Social Network, Molly's Game, Trial of the Chicago 7.
Yeah, I thought of that too.
Dark Waters, Everest. Dolomite Is My Name.
What?
Straight Outta Compton and Just Mercy.
Oh, Straight Outta Compton was a good fucking movie.
So lots of films. I had 19 on my original list and it was a lot of hard work sort of paring it back. So
nice work.
There we are. That's our feedback on, well, that's our choices for the topic ahead. What about your feedback? And we can do that in a segment that ends every show. It's called The Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with a contribution from B Dizzle from the We Watched a Thing podcast.
What up?
He said, awesome topic. Number 3, The Big Sick.
Ooh. Wow, that's high.
Number 2, Braveheart, which I ruled out.
I was wondering why? Because of the fictionalized...
It's too inspired by not enough. Yeah. It's just based on a poem and no one knows.
Oh, it's a poem?
Yeah, true.
Oh, I thought it was fucking... Okay, cool.
And number 1, The Social Network.
Word.
But otherwise, it was my number 1 inspired by film. I love that movie. It's
sure.
Brilliant. From Rob Walters, Miracle, which is the story about the American hockey team in the 1980, I think, at the 1980 Winter Olympics, beating the Russians. The Wolf of Wall Street and Moneyball.
Okay. Look, Moneyball is really interesting. It's fine. But it's numbers. It's about maths, basically.
Yeah. Jonathan Kidd said, again, Miracle. Love that hockey speech. Number 2, Catch Me If You Can, There You Go, Wayne.
Ooh.
Number 1, Goodfellas, It Has to Be, There You Go, Me.
Apparently it does. Apparently it does.
Aiden Park is the number 3, Green Book. Number 2, Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith.
Will Smith.
And number 1, Rush. So there you go.
Yeah, boy.
On all mentions. Lou Fryer's number 3, The Imitation Game. Number 2, The King's Speech. Number 1, 12 Years a Slave. Gia Crow said number 3, The Big Short. Thought that would be on your list.
I looked at this one. The only reason it wasn't is that the people in it aren't actually real. Like the Steve Carell character is an amalgamation of another guy and another guy. So that's the only reason. Otherwise, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, look, doesn't matter. You still got Gia's vote because number 2, Molly's Game. And 1, The Social Network.
My girl.
Aaron Dundee said number 3, Public Enemies. Number 2, The Wolf of Wall Street. Number 1, Friday Night Lights. A beautiful score / soundtrack and Billy Bob Thornton's locker room speech. Get me every time.
Wow. Okay.
Chef Ben Randall said number 3, Memphis Belle.
Yeah. Was that real? Yeah, it was real because of the last line. Oh,
yep.
Good call.
Number 2, Awakenings. Number 1, Cool Runnings. Oh, irreverent and from left field. What on, Chef Ben? Sam Hurley from the Movie Reviews and 20Q's podcast said number 3, Social Network. Number 2, Schindler's List. Number 1, Goodfellas. Yeah, Sam. Now, David Power, top-level patron, and moderator of the Facebook listener community, link is in the show notes, said actual accounts of real events and people. Number three, Ed Wood.
Wow.
Number two, okay. 8 Men Out. And number one, Goodfellas.
8 Men Out is a fucking inspired call.
I've never seen that shit. One.
Ray Liotta, fucking Kevin Costner. No, wait. That was Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah, 8 Men Out is about like the eight baseball players that threw that famous baseball game.
Okay, right. Yeah. I've not seen it. Adam Alua, another top level patron of the show, said number three, Catch Me If You Can. Number two, The Imitation Game.
Ooh.
Number one, Captain Phillips.
Ah, thought that might be on yours.
Adam is the captain now. Well done. It should have been on mentions, absolutely. And then the aforementioned Matt Evans, as you said, Wayne. Three, Zodiac. Two, Tag. Mm. Number one, Into the Wild, a film I did not like.
So you saw that's a Reese Witherspoon one, yeah?
It's Emile Hirsch, I think.
That's the Sean Penn directed
one.
Yeah,
he directed that one.
You didn't like it?
But obviously, it spoke to Matt in a way that did not work for me. Mm. Joe Doherty said, a lot of recency bias here. Number three, Cry Freedom. Number two, The Right Stuff.
Oh, wow.
And number one, Goodfellas, yet again. An honorable mention to the true story of Bloodsport, which a number of people had.
I didn't know it was a true story. I love that shit.
Hmm. And then lastly, Mario Leon said, Philomena, Alive, and Glory.
There you go.
There we are. So quite the eclectic mix of a very wide genre and a great choice from Nicole. Thank you so much, Nicole, joining us or for being a top level patron and for giving us this topic. I think it's perfect.
Gangster.
All right, Wayne, how do the listeners get in touch with us? And yeah, all that stuff.
Cool. They should either Google the Countdown Podcast to find our socials or go to our website, which is our new website, which is still in construction. You know, we're still getting to there, so it's not
ready. It's not pretty.
It's getting there. It's getting there. Okay. What is it? The Countdown.
Countdownpodcast.com.
Or you can email us at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
Nothing else to add there except tell you what's happening next week for episode 359.
Top 10 Last 10.
Yeah, it's been a good 4 months. So there should be some good things for Wayne to talk about there because he's had time to watch 10 whole films.
10 whole films. And then I had to cut it back because we already talked about them in the show and I got to watch a few more. But that's cool. I'll swing it back next
that's
week.
That's what it'll do for you.
It's all good. So there you are. Number top 10, last 10.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And that is the end of the show. Really appreciate your listenership. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Fuck you, fuckball.
When you don't have Goodfellas on your list of top 10 based on a true story films.
Hey,
we'll catch you next week. See ya!